I gathered the women in this book under the sign of a compliment that every one of them received in their lives. They were called sharp. The precise nature of their gifts varied, but they had in common the ability to write unforgettably. The world would not have been the same without Dorothy Parker's acid reflections on the absurdities of her life, or Rebecca West's ability to sweep half the world's history into a first-person account of a single trip, or Hannah Arendt's ideas about totalitarianism, or Mary McCarthy's fiction that took as its subject the strange consciousness of the princess among the trolls, or Susan Sontag's ideas about interpretation, or Pauline Kael's energetic swipes at filmmakers, or Nora Ephron's skepticism about the feminist movement, or Renata Adler's catalog of the foibles of those in power, or Janet Malcolm's reflections on the perils and rewards of psychoanalysis and journalism. As for the preface of Michelle Dean's book, Sharp, The Women Who Made an Art of Having an Opinion. And as you heard with that list of authors of whom Dean writes, our book indeed opens with a look at one of perhaps my most favorite purveyors of wit and acidic prose, Dorothy Parker, otherwise known as Dorothy Rothschild. As Dorothy Parker wrote in an early issue of Vogue magazine, there is only one thing as thrilling as one's first love affair. That is one's first corset. They both give the same feeling of delightful importance. This one is planned to give something approaching a waistline to the straight sturdiness of the 12-year-old. In a November 1916 issue of Vanity Fair, Dorothy Parker explained her singleness in a piece titled, Why I Haven't Married. It was a send-up of the New York dating scene. Apparently as hopeless in Parker's era as it is in our own, she sketched the types a single woman found herself dining with in terms that still seemed apt. Of Ralph, a nice man of unfailing solicitousness, quote, I saw myself surrounded by a horde of wraps and sofa pillows. I saw myself a member of the society opposed to women's suffrage, end quote. Of Maximilian, a leftist bohemian, quote, he capitalized the A in art, end quote. Of Jim, a rising businessman, quote, in his affections I am rather third, first and second Hag and Hag, and then third, me. Well, Dorothy Parker got her start, as so many of these women did in the early days, at the same time that mass-market upscale magazines were getting their start or restart, when Vogue, Vanity Fair, The New Yorker, The Atlantic were all starting up or starting a new phase of their lives. And Dorothy Parker, a smart aleck, young, and talented writer, was there to add zest and bite to what threatened to be staid, upper-class-oriented pains to the good life of the pre-World War I days. Her acid-tongued wit continued well into the new century. Her life and her writing intersected with that of literary icons Ernest Hemingway, Scott Fitzgerald, and Rebecca West. The book is written as a collective biography, moving from one woman to another, sometimes bringing them together, sometimes looking at them individually. And as such, Sharp offers us chapter-long biographies of women as brilliant and diverse as Hannah Arendt, a German emigre from Hitler's Europe, whose often deeply analytical and always straight-ahead prose excoriated the political extremes she personally encountered. Mary McCarthy, a New York-based writer whose eyes wide-open examinations of contemporary life in then-modern urban America ask questions about marriage, love, family through her novels, and whose reviews of other novelists and writers brought her into both connection with and often strong disagreements with her fellow reviewers, such as Pauline Kael, noted film critic, and among the many others profiled in this book. So join, delve into the life, the times, and most specifically the sharp thinking of Susan Sontag, of Joan Didion, of Lillian Hellman, Nora Ephron, and the others, as Michelle Dean interweaves the lives of these women whose work both graced and electrified the century that started with 1900. I found the author's voice and writing to oscillate between the intellectual and the homey. Dean's wording invites the reader in with its often friendly nature, and then delivers on the objectives she sets out in her introduction. As she writes, that these women achieved what they did in the 20th century only makes them more remarkable. They came up in a world that was not eager to hear women's opinions about anything. It can be easy to forget that Dorothy Parker began publishing her caustic verse before women even had the right to vote. So when I ask in the following pages what made these women who they were, such elegant arguers, both hindered and helped by men, prone to but not defined by mistakes, and above all completely unforgettable, I do it for one simple reason. Because even now, even arguably after feminism, we still need more women like this. Sharp, then, is not only an academic study of women of intellectual prowess aimed solely at the college-educated crowd. In an interview, Dee notes that she took 3 years to research the book, and in an afterword, she provides page after page after page of both primary and secondary sources. Sharp is as well a comfortable pick-it-up-and-put-it-down kind of read that will not overwhelm the little gray cells, but will rather delight them with its blend of internet-ready facts and light opinions and thoughtful insights into the intellectual lives of these 20th century women. And so picking up on an earlier observation in my review, it's not surprising when, as we move past the opening chapters of the book, our author is suave at making connections between and among the individuals about whom she writes. We see Pauline Kael interacting with Mary McCarthy, Mary McCarthy interacting with Hannah Arendt, several of them interacting with Joan Didion. It's a wonderful collection of both individual biographies and then collective biographies as well. As our author points out again and again, none of these strong women commentators had easy personal lives. While many of them were born into wealth, or at least well-off families, the trajectory of their lives often from their youth did not follow the path we would expect for children born into well-off circumstances. For many of these women suffered from neglect during their childhood years, and most as well did not find their entry into the world of noted commentary as adults anything but an easy one. They were, after all, working in societies during the 20th century, both American and European in some cases, that were more inclined to put their faith in male-generated ideas and comments rather than those expressed by women. Yet, as we learn, all of these women, through their perseverance and most of all through their talent, prevailed as critical and appreciated thinkers of Western intellectual life, and all deservedly have a place in this book titled Sharp. I'm going to finish by, of course, giving our author the last word. This comes from the last chapter of the book, where she writes to tell us, the expectations women have for each other, the way we all size each other up, so many hopes for each other, and so many moments too of disappointment. That is the nature, apparently, of being a woman who thinks and talks about thinking in public. These women were nothing, excuse me, in writing this book, I had a great deal of time to reflect on what exactly people meant when they called these women sharp. Many offered the word as a compliment, but there was a slight sense of terror underlying it. Sharpness, after all, cuts. The longer I thought about it, the more convinced I became that there was a fantasy afoot when these women were called sharp, or mean, or dark ladies, or whatever other vaguely ominous-sounding label people wanted to apply to them. The fantasy held that they were destructive and dangerous and mercurial, as though intellectual life were a kind of gothic novel. These women were nothing of the kind. They were not always right, but they were not wrong more often than they should have been. And sometimes they were very, very right. The difficulty is that people have trouble with women who aren't nice, who do not genuflect, who have the courage to sometimes be wrong in public. You can speak only in the voice you have been given, our author concludes, and that voice has a tenor and inflection given to you by all the experience you have. Some of that experience will inevitably be about being a woman. We're all stuck with each other, stuck with the history of those who preceded us. You might make your own way, but you always do it in the streams and eddies forded by others, no matter how much you may personally like or dislike them, agree or disagree with them. Wish you were able to transcend this whole situation. That was certainly a lesson every woman in this book had to learn. And I'll say, learn it, they did. It's quite a fascinating, sometimes fun, always interesting read. Sharp, The Women Who Made an Art of Having an Opinion by Michelle Dean. It's available at every fine local library, including the West Lafayette Public.